B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
From NBC Sports Philadelphia, Mark Jackson joins us. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are y'all today?
Doing awesome. Man. We're questioning our Eagles, but looking forward to a nice matchup with the Celtics tonight, my friend. First off, Joel Embiid out. He's got the separated left ring finger. What do you know about the injury, and have you ever separated a finger while playing?
Yes, I've had it. I had it twice, once in my shooting hand, taped it up, and this is the beginning of the season. Wow. Taped it up, kept playing, but I will say if you, with every bit of contact, it re-injures the finger. So that's one way to look at it. But then I had on my left hand where I got it separated, came back in the game, and then Villanova grad, good friend of mine, Alvin Williams, I think it's Toronto Raptors at times, punched down on the ball and completely fractured the same finger within a five-minute span.
Wow.
Had to have surgery, plastic surgery, all that on that finger. That finger looked bad. It looked real and ugly. So I've had it twice. Once I played through it for the season, the other one I had it asked me so bad I had to sit out for the year.
Would you recommend surgery right away for Joel Embiid, or is it a wait and see type of thing?
Well, no, I think his is different. His is just dislocated, so it requires rest. Or because, you know, every time you get hit in the hand, it re-injures it. So it puts the timetable back. So he can't get the surgery, respectfully. And I don't even know if his back injury requires surgery, but I will say this. I don't know how long he'll be out for, but the many days or weeks he can rest it with no contact, the better. Unfortunately, they can't be. I'm hoping they're not talking surgery, though. I'm just hoping they're not.
Okay.
Oh, come on, Mark. It wouldn't surprise you at all if he had to have surgery with this medical staff.
Nah, this season is so important. I can't see it. I can't see it. They're on a mission this year. This is not the past where they losing games on purpose. They trying to win, so I can't see it.
Last week, Al Horford came out and said that he wasn't being used properly and he wants to do more for this offense. Well, no JoJo tonight, so will we see his role shift at all in this Sixers offense?
Yes, I think we will. You know, Al is more comfortable to me. Al is more comfortable at the center position. He has more spacing to work with, even though Joel Embiid, when he is in there, sometimes Al. The primary thing is Joel on the box, Al on the top of the key. But with that being said, I can see Al get a little busy in a little post area, imposing his will, as well as from the top of the key. You know, and that's where he specializes from shooting and as well as decision-making. You can put the ball in Al Horford's hands and look for him at the top of the key, and he can make cuts, he can set pick and pops, he can do those things. So I expect to have a major impact on his ball club against Boston tonight.
Why do you think there has been such a bit of a learning curve here with Joel Embiid and Al Horford playing together?
I don't think the problem is Joel Embiid and Al Horford. I believe the disadvantage to having Joel Embiid, Al Horford, and Ben Simmons. I have having those three. One guy is okay, meaning Joel is okay for shooting the three and creating space. The other guy refuses to. So the problem is not Joel and Al. The problem is Ben Simmons, Joel, and Al on the court at the same time. That's why the learning curve is so major, because you have three guys who want to work around a box area or around a paint. So that means you only have two perimeter guys. That's total opposite of how nowadays the game is played. You know, I really believe, say with Trey Burks out there, you got Al, you got Joel. I think they can coexist and anything be better. But when we have someone, another third guy when we're operating that paint, it's just too crowded.
Mark, say if Joel has to miss five games, whatever it may be, or maybe even a longer extended period of time, is it kind of a detriment at all in your mind to have Horford playing mostly at the five, being as when Joel comes back, you're going to have to get him back to the four? Would you look at it more of a time for him to get himself better adapted at the four in a way where he's going to be okay playing with Joel and Ben Simmons, as you said?
I believe when your best center is out, you're going to plug your second best center in and just make it work. So with Matisse Thybulle back, hopefully, you know, James Ennis, they're not going to play
Paolo Quinn or Pell more than they would have any time else. Al will be playing a lot at that five slot to help him 35 minutes with Joel being out. He'll be playing at five, and they'll figure it out when Joel get back. I don't think they can look in the future. I think they put their best five on the court, and their best five includes Al Horford at the center spot.
Would you expect it?
Joel is out.
Gotcha. Right. Would you have expected Matisse Thybulle to have this much of an impact on this team from the start of the season to now? Because the team was doing great with him in. They were something like 15-2 in games that he played more than, I think it was more than 20 minutes. And now he missed a lot of time with his injury, supposed to be coming back tonight. And they just seem like a different team without his presence off the bench.
I agree. Because why? He's a player that you just plug and play. You can put him on the court. He can create havoc on the defensive end as well as on the offensive end. He started off slow but has developed into a very consistent and reliable three-point shooter. So once again, we have guys that like Joel, Al Horford, and Ben, they need spacers that can also play the other end. And that's where Matisse comes in. I know everybody wants to talk about JJ. We miss JJ shooting. But I've always been the one to say, and I say it again, I really believe this team is better now not having one marksman. They have a few guys who's hitting league average or a little bit above, meaning Matisse. So it's, you're not just relying on one guy to space the floor. You got three guys to space the floor. But now on the defensive end, these guys are credible. You don't have to worry about teams going at them. These guys in James Ennis, Matisse Thybulle, Mike Scott. Teams are not going to go at them defensively because they can hold their own.
The other thing is when you talk about energy off that bench, do you think Trey Burke has now won that backup point guard position?
I know wholeheartedly. I think his impact has been seen very high. He's been very consistent when as of late, giving them quality minutes. And I know Coach used the phrase, I don't want guys getting stale or rotting on the bench, which means sometimes he'll be throw guys in there so they get some good rhythm going. But I think Trey Burke's been playing extremely well as of late. He's kind of found his niche within the lineup. So I don't think it's going to be very hard for Coach Brett Brown to go back giving Neto those minutes.
Mark, I've seen a little bit more zone from the Sixers lately, and I think, if my eye will tell me the truth here, that maybe even a little matchup zone in there. Do you think this team is kind of built to do that every once in a while, or maybe it could become a true weapon defensively for them?
Believe it or not, I think it could become a weapon for this team.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of their length. You know, from the five, you know, they have to have the average tallest starting lineup in the NBA. You put a matchup zone out there with their arms spread, it will make it difficult. Why? Because there's not enough time on the shot clock to really move the offense. The best way to beat a zone is you got to move from one side to the other. But when it's taking you 8 seconds to bring the ball down the court, that's only giving you 12 seconds to work with. So you got to get something quick and fast where that zone can really help the Sixers. But with that being said, I don't know if that zone will make Ben and Thybulle more effective or take away from their defensive prowess because those two together on the floor create so much havoc.
Speaking with Mark Jackson, NBC Sports Philadelphia, former Sixer also. With the deal with Ben Simmons, Brett Brown said, he was asked about it, the comments he made from, I believe it's now 16 games ago, where he was asked about Ben Simmons shooting a three and maybe shooting 8 free throws a game. Those two things have not happened in the 15 games that have happened since that one game after Brett Brown issued the challenge. So Brett said that he's failed. Do you see it as Brett's failure to coach or Ben Simmons' failure to improve?
That's a loaded question.
I know. It's loaded. The chamber is rotating.
I don't believe it's Coach Brown has failed as a coach. Maybe he slightly failed at the connection with one of his star players that he asked this player to do something for the betterment of the team, and the player refuses to do it. So it's only but so much you can do as a coach to want something from your players. So, for example, if Ben wasn't a starter, a high caliber, an all-star, if, say, Ben was James Ennis would be on the bench. If that was Mike Scott, Mike Scott would be on the bench. But because that's Ben, you kind of pick and choose your battles. And he's telling Ben, I need you to shoot it, but Ben refuses to. So I believe it goes to Ben not wanting to. So I'm gonna state it like this: is maybe Ben not wanting to get better, but just Ben just being stuck in his ways of wanting to be the guy he is.
Stuck in his ways, Mark. That's an interesting quote that you have there. Stuck in his ways, to me, right away, what came to my head was he's reached his ceiling. Would that be fair of your assessment of Ben Simmons? We're killing you today with the tough ones, Mark.
Trey, you gonna let me put them on
hey, man, you know, what you want from me? I'm just letting you have, you know what I mean?
These are all opinions. They're just opinions, that's all.
Listen, yes, I hate to say it. If Ben refuses to shoot a jumper, I think this is his ceiling. Coming out of college, I was very harsh on Ben. I thought Ben was a great talent, but I didn't see no more. And you can go back and listen to the tapes. I said Ben was going to be a Lamar Odom type of player, meaning number-wise, where it's 16-7-7. I believe back then I said 16-6-6 because I didn't see him as a powerful. He wanted to be a point guard, and he refuses to shoot in college. So him coming to the NBA, I thought he's going to be a 16-6-6 or 16-7-7 kind of guy. You go back and listen to the tapes. I said it. So, yes, his numbers last year were higher than what I anticipated, but Ben is showing me if he refused to shoot the jumper, maybe he is a 16-7-7 kind of guy, which is not horrible, but you will want more out of a max player. And more doesn't necessarily mean you got to score 30, but if you're not willing to improve for the betterment of the team, yes, you may be doing great, but you can also become better. And when you become better, it makes the team better. If you refuse to do the one thing that can help everyone, then I have to say this is your ceiling.
All right. Mark Jackson, last one for you tonight. Obviously, we got the matchup with the Celtics tonight. Do you like the Sixers tonight at home against the Celtics?
You know what? I like the Sixers at home versus anybody. Okay. I really do. I do. I like them at home versus anybody. I think it's a mental game now. I think them playing at home is a mental game. When they're at home, they're more comfortable. They know they got their back up there, meaning the fans. They know they can walk down that dark alley because they're coming with 20,000 strong. That's what support them. And it's a mental game. I think mentally they believe they can't be beat at home. Mm-hmm. Or if they can, you got to play an exceptionally A game, and they got to be on the six. Got to be on the F game. So I really believe that the Sixers can beat Boston in their home.
Oh, you know, and we have to ask you. We never asked you how mom enjoyed her jersey.
She enjoyed it. Thank you, guys. She enjoyed it very much. Right. Matter of fact, I took a picture. I got to send it to y'all. But she enjoyed it very much, man. And she, you know, she appreciates Trey. And you know, she's not a smarty pants like me. I'm like, yeah, about damn time. Mark. No, man. My mother's always been a fan of Trey since Tank introduced a business partner of Tank and I, Trey and I introduced him 15 years ago, man. Oh, wow. She's always been a fan of Trey. Yeah, and you know what's funny? I forgot to tell y'all this. What's funny is ever since I moved back to Philly 2 years ago from Florida, you'd be surprised or how many times a day people say, hey, Trey Thompson. I'm like, no, I'm not Trey.
I can see it. There's a little resemblance. Really tall. You rocked a beard a little bit while you were playing. Mm-hmm. Trey's rocking that now.
You know, we all bald head, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but, you know, Trey's a good dude, man. I'm happy to see him on it with y'all.
There you go.
Yeah, appreciate it.
About Mark Jackson, you can follow Mark Jackson on Twitter at Jacko2544. Always great talking to my man. Thanks so much.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.